Welcome back to the Psalms, my friends. Here in Psalm 123, we continue the climb through the Songs of Ascents. Now, we have just four verses today, and that brevity gives me a bit of space to bring us into the grander story of these songs. The 15 Psalms from 120 to 134 were songs to be sung along the journey. Three times a year, all of Israel was called together to meet in Jerusalem to celebrate a week-long festival to the Lord, Passover in spring, Pentecost in summer, and Tabernacles in the fall. The journey would take several days, and from all directions, it was a journey up. Jerusalem sits in a mountainous region at an elevation of about 2,500 feet, that's 760 meters, with seven mountain peaks all around, including, most importantly, Mount Zion. And the region that surrounds it is all hills, so that for reasons both physical and spiritual, traveling to Jerusalem is always referred to as going up. Many of the Israelites would be traveling along the Jordan River Valley, and those coming from southeast around the Dead Sea would actually pass through the earth's lowest elevation on land. The shores of the Dead Sea are 1,400 feet below sea level, 427 meters. Picture the ancient Israelites filling the roadways as large families traveled together, meeting up along the way with cousins and relatives as more and more joined the group. And all the way, there were songs to be sung. Traveling songs, like a great road trip playlist, the Songs of Ascents are truly psalms for the journey upward. Yet here, at the fourth track on the list, we find ourselves down in a valley once again. The tone is somber. That's because our musical climb is actually a series of five hills, climbing up over one ridge at a time. Notice in the title that each of these is a song of ascents, plural. Each hill on this journey is a set of three short psalms that start low and move upward to a summit. In Psalm 123, we find ourselves in a valley as we begin our second ascent. Yet from the very first verse, we are already looking up. Let's begin at verse 1. I lift up my eyes to you who sit enthroned in heaven. So we're down, but we're looking up, way up. Have you ever found yourself in a pit? The struggles and stresses of life force your gaze downward when finally you remember to look up. For me, it's quite personal. I've hit a lot of valleys in my life. In one of my deepest valleys, God met me with a verse from Daniel 4, a passage written by King Nebuchadnezzar of all people. I raised my eyes toward heaven, and my sanity was restored. That verse was precisely the reminder I needed to lift my own eyes heavenward. And like the proud old king, I too found my sanity restored. Perhaps for you, this verse, at this time, is the reminder you need. Always remember to look up. Now, a look can say a whole world about what's going on in the heart. But what lies behind this look? Verse 2. As the eyes of slaves look to the hand of their master, as the eyes of a female slave look to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look to the Lord our God, till he shows us his mercy. So the gaze in these eyes is that of a slave. Interesting. Most translations use the word servant, and that is probably the better connotation to relate the Hebrew to our minds. For our modern minds, the word slave immediately brings up a sense of oppression and ownership, whereas Hebrew servants in Israel could not be owned or oppressed, as both were forbidden by God's law. Check out our guides to Exodus 21, the book of Philemon, and our 1 Peter 2 B-side for better insight on that. But for now, we should understand that the attitude behind the eyes in this picture are those of a faithful servant looking to the hand of her mistress. So what does that mean? For the Hebrew mind in Bible times, it carried a great deal of meaning. Throughout that world, directions were often given to servants and slaves, not with words, but rather with hand gestures. An entire language of hand signs was used to signal the servant to the master's directives. Thus, the eyes of a servant on duty were ever directed to the hands awaiting direction. And so the psalm declares, as servants of the Most High, our eyes look to His hands to direct us. Yet the Master's hand was also the hand that feeds, and so we too look to God for providence. And the Master's hand was protection. Servants and slaves had little access to weapons for self-defense, so it was the Master's responsibility to defend. So what is the intent here? Perhaps all of those, but one essential distinction should not be missed here. The eyes of these slaves are looking up, back in verse 1, to you who sit enthroned in heaven. There is a trust in these eyes that should never be placed in any human master. These are servants of the Most High. And to know what they're really looking for, just look back to verse 2. So our eyes look to the Lord our God, till He shows us His mercy. Have mercy on us, Lord. Have mercy on us. For we have endured no end of contempt. So the look in these eyes is a plea for mercy, for help. They've endured no end of contempt. Contempt is to be treated as something worthless, despised, like you don't even matter. Twice the psalmist laments, we have endured no end of it. Now we begin to see the depth of sorrow in those eyes. They seek God's mercy. The word behind mercy here means to bend or stoop down to show kindness or favor to an inferior. That's what they need. Lord, you are higher. Please stoop down to help us. We need you. Verse 4. We have endured no end of ridicule from the arrogant, of contempt from the proud. Now that just feels awful. If you've ever endured ridicule from the arrogant and boastful, you know how small it can make you feel, how it can crush your heart under its cruel boot. And yet, I don't sense bitterness here. Bitterness refuses to look up. These eyes are hurting, but they're determined, to look beyond the arrogant and proud and up to the one who sits enthroned in heaven. And that's it. The psalm ends right there, with the contempt of the proud. Remember, we're in the valley. It's supposed to be sad. But sometimes you need that, need to dwell here a moment to process. After all, sad songs say so much. And yet, we are looking up. And don't underestimate the difference made by the direction you fix your eyes. There's a reason your coach always told you to keep your eyes on the ball, because your direction follows your vision. The closest I ever came to a car accident happened on the 15 freeway in San Diego. I was a young driver in the fast lane when the car in front of me hit the brakes hard. I panicked. I hit my brakes just as hard and stared at the bumper ahead, hoping and praying not to slam into it. But I was annoyed. Why did she stop in the middle of the fast lane? There's an emergency lane right next to us. Then I looked around. We were both in the emergency lane. She did pull over, but my eyes were so fixed on the problem in front of me, I followed it right into the emergency lane. Direction follows vision. So I learned, get your eyes off the problem and on to the great problem solver. Colossians 3 tells us to set our hearts and minds on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And Hebrews 12 drives it home. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Read Psalm 123. We're in the valley now, but look up and keep climbing.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.